You looking for this?
Welcome back, everyone, to the finale of our Moon Knight series of the pod. Thank you all for listening and watching along with us. We greatly appreciate it, and you're the reason why we do it. I feel like Marvel absolutely killed it with the Moon Knight series, and I really hope we get to see Mark, Steven, and Jake in the not-too-distant future. Unfortunately, this series left us with more unanswered questions, but as always, I'll start with one of those questions with the Legion. Okay, gents, the question this week is Harrow dead?
I think Harrow is as dead as Mark Spector was.
Michael, gosh dang it, word for word, my exact answer.
Wow. Time I agree with everyone for the first time it seems like years is, I think,
answer.
Marvel trope, all the villains die at the end of everything, so he's dead. Dead Harrow's dead.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh,
yep.
Dead, huh?
Yeah, 100%. I think he's dead.
Yep. Leroy, you think dead as well?
Yep.
Word for word, Jordan agrees with exactly how Michael said it. Now, they could totally move on from him in the next story, or they could reuse him again. They've definitely left it open because we've seen how life works when you are an avatar. There's some extra perks. You don't have to stay dead. He's only mostly dead. He's
because Amit is in him now. Amit is in him, and he's got more shot. Jake came up and gathered him, dude. He's gonzo. He's like,
you're jumping
he's like, hey,
ahead
Kevin
of
Feige, I'm done. Or like, I've served your purpose. Now then roll on to the next villain we're going to steamroll over. And so he's pop dead, dude.
He's way more in depth than what a normal avatar is, because the goddess herself conjured inside of him. So my answer is no. And I actually think he's going to come back, because we didn't see him actually suit up at all in the fight. Like, he was the avatar at that point, and we didn't see him suit up. And I actually think he's going to come back as Shadow Knight, which I think would be very sweet.
It's too early for this.
Dog Amit. That's very interesting, though. I hadn't even considered that.
I have some more thoughts on him, but I'd like to put him in order as we go through the episode.
Right. Mm. We have to realize the fact that Mark/Steven's death was due to his separation from separation from Khonshu, as he was no longer his avatar at the time he was shot.
Right.
Harrow is like the direct opposite of that. Not only was he the avatar, but he had the entire deity of Amit within him. So
Khonshu told Mark to kill Harrow and/Amit, and he seemed pretty convinced that it would work. Do we think that Khonshu doesn't fully understand how to kill a god?
Well, potentially, and he was also in like the Moon Knight state there, and he had like the crescent blade. So I don't know if, you know, shooting him with a 9mm.
But don't all these guys reside in the Overvoice?
Khonshu
was
going to do much to him.
Right.
It seemed like what it was pointing to was that this was a unique situation, and rather than putting Amit back into a statue, they're going to put her into a human and kill both of them at once.
Mm-hmm. But like, even if she was in the statue, doesn't that just limit her influence here on our quote unquote material plane, if you will? Doesn't her actual physical manifestation, if these beings even have that, reside somewhere else?
I think she was on Earth. Absolutely on Earth.
So it's the only ones that are in the Overvoid are the ones that aren't in the Ushabtis. So if you're in an Ushabti, or in this case, Harrow, Leroy actually kind of convinced me, because Harrow is acting as the Ushabti for
It almost sounds Amit. It almost sounds case. Like,
well, hear
and
me
so
out.
And instead of it being stone, it's flesh.
But
so
hear me out. We saw
way more breakable.
Towedit's Ushabti, and she was in the Overvoid.
Because I think it might be a person or like a choice.
Did we see her?
I don't think we saw Towerheads.
So we
We don't see it officially. Everyone assumed it was
hers. I'm pretty sure.
Based on like
right,
the post credit.
I'm pretty sure we saw like, it in the show, but then at the end credits of that same episode, it was shown with all the other Ushabtis very clearly. Granted, could, that may not be concrete.
I think there's like four main hippopotamus goddesses in the Egyptian pantheon. And so.
Hippopotamus.
There is.
Hippopotamus.
Sure.
Hippopotamus.
Very interesting.
I'll stop on my.
I think that it could be the things listed that she's proper dead, or it could also be that that would cut off her connection to Earth, like this realm, and essentially lock her right. in the overvoid or wherever she may reside otherwise. Maybe Anubis, who knows?
But Leroy is correct. Yeah. There is like a good, like, I might be exaggerating this number, but I'm pretty sure it's like four or five deities that have something to do with a hippo, and a yeah. lot of them are hippo heads.
Yeah, right. Even Ahmet. I talked about that a while ago.
Right. So we could just be seeing one of those. Who knows? I mean, genuinely, this series ended with more questions than what I had going into it, yeah. which is
my gut bananas. Feeling is that they're Khonshu and Ahmet are trying to make their own paradise, because the dialogue between their Megazord fight at the end of episode 6 is like along the lines of like Ahmet's trying to convince Khonshu that we can make this paradise together away from everyone else, because back when they had the Judge Judy episode with the other gods about Harrow trying to revive Ahmet, they're talking about how like gods don't interfere with the decisions of men anymore, and so they're off away in their own little world away from men, whereas there are men, obviously Harrow and his disciples and followers, wanting to bring Ahmet back to bring forth this paradise onto Earth. So it almost seems like these gods have their own agenda to make their own paradise, coming back to the worshiper or coming back to humans to give them power. Obviously we saw that at the end of this, or yeah, 3/4 of the way through this last episode, when the souls Ahmet ate gave her more power. And so why not be in a world,
big girl.
Yeah, why not be in a place where you are worshipped, where you are powerful, rather than being why share that power amongst other gods when you could have that all to yourself?
Right. And it seemed like
it, right. And she came out and proved that she was literally just about power, because the first thing like out of her mouth was your scales are imbalanced.
But who cares?
She just didn't care. Yeah.
And her whole right. And who cares? Because you'll do my bidding and you're going to kill whoever I say to kill. So, like, she was literally just about power.
We saw him staring death in the face with that line, the scales are imbalanced. He was ready to go.
He was ready absolutely to go. A true believer, yeah.
Yeah, that just proved how genuine he had been the entire time, from the first second of the first episode with the glass in the feet all the way to the end. It's wonderfully portrayed villain in this case.
I was surprised, but pleasantly surprised that he was so committed to his end goal. And I loved how they paid that off. I thought that was great.
And honestly, the worst part about him was that he was still with Ahmet even after that. Like, she broke what he viewed her as being all about by accepting him. And you can see the conflict, and he just decided, screw the ideals, I'm just going to go with this. And that was his true downfall.
Yeah.
I wanted to chime in before we got too far off from the other gods, and then specifically Ahmet seeming to undermine what her principles are supposed to be. She made the point that last time she had an avatar whose scales were perfectly balanced, she got betrayed and put in stone for 2,000 years. Mm-hmm. So that shows that Alexander the Great's scales were perfectly balanced, and for whatever reason, he betrayed her, and now she seems to have taken that personally to the point of not even holding to what her core principles are supposed to be, or at least how they were presented. I also find it interesting that pretty much the whole top roster of the most worshipped Egyptian gods don't seem to be around, with the exception of like Osiris. And it makes me wonder if this whole thing, like, if they were the gods that were primarily worshipped, then obviously humans no longer worshipping them would have been taken more severely by, say, like Ra or Amun-Ra or Anubis and all them, where people like,
right,
or gods like Khonsu and Ammit still seem to hold their principles despite not being worshipped by a majority of the populace. And so I wonder if there was some sort of coup that happened among the gods or something to that effect, where if gods like Ra and Anubis aren't around, then gods like Khonsu and Ammit immediately get that much more powerful and influential. So you kind of mentioned it being a power grab that could extend to all the gods, really. And it's not like Khonsu's off the hook at all comparative to Ammit, because he's still got his own villainous tendencies.
Yeah, it's a really interesting point you make, because, yeah, all of the other gods who were clearly very involved in ancient Egypt at one point they've taken off. They're doing other things now somewhere in the vast multiplanar universe. And it seems all the avatars that are left behind aren't much more than prison wardens, in a sense. Like, they're just watching to make sure, you know, things like Khonsu and Ammit just kind of stay quiet or whatever. So, yeah, it's curious to see what... Ammit was imprisoned, obviously, but Khonsu made a decision to stay and still be involved. And I'd like to, hopefully at some point, find out the reasoning behind that.
I don't want to get, like, into the negative this early, but the one thing that was never fully answered for me is, so Mark and Steven, episode 5, they're on the boat, and you learn from Towerette that, like, this is all because they believed in, or mainly Steven believed in the Duat as, like, the afterlife. And that's why Towerette had not seen, like, a soul in forever. She was shuffling her papers, trying to get everything figured out. And then all of a sudden, like, they walk outside onto the, like, deck of the boat, and there are what appears to be thousands of deaths. Which means that all of those people would have to be true believers of this whole, like, religious, like, line. And we just don't get any answers for all those people dead, because
I'm not sure if it was thousands. I might have to look at the scene again, but it's many. And I think that we're kind of on a timeline here following Steven and Mark. And in this episode, we kind of go back a little bit to right after Mark dies or is shot. Harrow gets the little statue and they leave, and they meet that checkpoint on the road,
security checkpoint.
And he kills like, I don't know, 20 some people.
Right. It just feels like the souls that we saw dropping, like, multiplied tenfold by everybody at that checkpoint. And it means that everyone at that checkpoint believe
they were killed by Ammit's power, and so that's why they end up
there. That's where I'm at. Yep.
I suppose that makes sense. The numbers just don't match up, though, in my opinion. I rewatched it today, and there's a lot. There's like 6 dudes at that checkpoint, and there's at least in
probably
the 20s.
Probably just works like the Dothraki in Game of Thrones. Of people. You know, there's just always thousands of them, despite 12 being on screen.
That honestly, it could have been that, like, for dramatic effect, when they're down in the Duat and just all these souls falling from the sky. Yeah, I don't know.
It's a song.
Sounds like a nice
right. Nice and song. Then the only other gripe I have, which I had the entire time, was the CGI was incredibly lacking, except for the close up of Ammit. She that was very really good, but the CGI was very bad.
Hard to tell when you watch streaming, or when I watch anyways.
Honestly, I didn't really notice the CGI as much in this episode, but I did absolutely love Amit. That was wonderful. Yeah. Her and Khonshu fighting. Was...
When Mark...
When
Mark stands up from being resurrected and he gets like into the ceremonial armor, it literally looks like someone pulled it out of a cartoon and pasted it over a real photo.
The dialogue
it looks
in that
so
scene,
bad, and it entirely
going back
drew
to all
me
the
out.
Flashbacks of like when Khonshu's talking over it, and it's like, I've sensed the pain in you for years. And oh my gosh, that was leaning towards the edge of like, okay, this is the Moon Knight I'm waiting to see. This is it. Yeah. This is here we go. We're ramping up for it. And
I think one of the key things that, because Moon Knight's journey is obviously far from over. In fact, you could argue that the bigger antithesis of this whole series is their third identity, in the sense that he seems mostly opposed to what Mark and Steven are trying to do, and he's another pilot of the body. So, but with that whole scene, what it really showed is how fantastic it is when Steven and Mark are on the same page and they're both like tactically piloting the body, both as Mr. Knight and Moon Knight.
Those transitions were
very cool.
So freaking
very
cool.
Really enjoyed that.
The part where Harrow like grabs Moon Knight's cape and then he switches to Mr. Knight and there is no cape and breaks loose of
fantastic.
It. Like
right.
Very
yeah, they really get in sync, which of course is signified by that heart bringing them back together in the sands.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I
got freaking amped when Mr. Knight started popping off the fight scene.
Like
John
Wick.
So cool.
Yeah.
Right. And when he's in like the little vendor corner and he's just going one-on-one with Harrow and he does like a freaking Mike Tyson combo on him, flicks his jacket and then brushes off his shoulder. I'm like, oh my gosh.
I imagine Jay-Z's a Dirt Off Your Shoulders playing in the background when he freaking pops the collar and flicks his shoulder. Seeing Steven have
so
the confidence
cool.
to go up against
so cocky.
Harrow like that, and before that he was like, "Hey Layla, look at all these skills I've learned." It's just like, it goes back to the muscle memory in there.
Speaking of Layla,
real quick before we move on, I just wanted to mention that I have had similar feelings to Cade, and I'm sure other people have that might be listening to this, where it's. If you know any semblance of the comics, we haven't quite gotten some of the fist of Khonshu and the vengeance and the brutality that that a lot of people associate with Moon Knight. But I would counter myself in saying we have gotten that. This series has just done a very good job of not showing us that, because I believe that's the Jake persona. So it's not that it's not
all,
there.
It's all Jake.
When they cut away from that part where... The Jake,
he was about to
the
die.
Jake Knight obviously
you don't
hated
know how
over
pissed off
I was. I was like,
hated it.
Oh, it was like pulling out, man. It was just gone.
Was like, I think that's right where they want everyone.
I know.
So
I know.
Agreed. And to this point, we are going to. I'm not going to say for sure, but I think we're going to see him. MCU is releasing something called Werewolf by Night on Halloween, which is a Moon Knight comic. So we're probably going to see him again.
I did not realize that.
This year, actually, in like a couple months.
Yeah.
Very interesting. That's like one of his most iconic villains, too.
I'm really...
Right, right.
I'm
so
really
we're most likely going to see him again.
Plus personalities or disconnected MCU personalities to start showing themselves in the greater MCU. Like, I want to see Moon Knight next to Shang-Chi, next to Black Knight. Like, just let's put this together.
Right.
Let's get going.
Right.
Seems like it's really started to drag on a bit after
Phase
4. But I understand it's kind of like a restart, but still.
on that note, can we appreciate the fact that that's literally the exact same formula that Marvel cooked up not a decade prior, where we had all these Iron Man and Captain America films, and we were like, all we want is to see them all together, and then we got Avengers, and here they are doing it all again, but in a new and refreshing way. I just think that's pretty cool.
Fun fact, Avengers' 10th birthday was just a couple days ago.
Yeah. That's what made me think of it.
Right. Yeah, they're really just copy and pasting just with different characters and different storylines. They're using like the same, we're going to introduce everybody separately and then bring them together in one huge event, Midnight Suns.
Hopefully.
Yeah, I definitely agree that I think we are getting like another buildup. I think with how much of the trust that we were asked of in episode one in terms of, hey, this is our story, get ready. Like the emotional pendulum swing of like building up the relationship with the characters that we have in this show. Mark, Steven, Layla, Harrow, Amit, Khonshu, like the, I don't know, it's really good to see that we are having, specifically a Disney Plus, like not on the silver screen show, invest in characters enough. I just think that swinging the other way, Michael, I would agree to an extent that I think we did get a little bit of the vengeful Moon Knight in like tastes. And I think that it's like setting that up for whatever it is in the future, whether it's that werewolf content or whatever it is, either in a movie or in season two or whatever. I was surprised at how much I was like, I really want the vengeful Moon Knight, and I think we'll get it. And I think we got it in like little teaspoons in this series. So it was a little disappointing, but I'm hopeful.
Well, yeah, because we haven't seen him whole. We have not seen whole Moon Knight yet.
Yep.
There's a very good chance we won't. If they're making Jake into like the murdery psychopath, well, they're gonna probably attempt to get like at least like subdue him somehow instead of, you know, because Mark and Steven are buddy buddy now. They're like interchangeable almost at this point, to where like one can take the wheel over the other, to where, you know, if they learn what Jake is doing, and when he's not in the Moon Knight, like they understand that, you know, they had the encounter in Cairo where they both woke up and they're like, dude, all these people are dead. Like, why did you do it? And neither one of them. So they're starting to understand that he's this murdery dude. And I don't know. I don't see them jiving with that.
The goal of this series was to show the split nature of Moon Knight or Mark or whoever you want to say, and then to have common ground found between Mark and Steven. I think they're saving the Jake element for future material and future use. I don't know if that'll mean a season two of Moon Knight. I don't know if that'll mean a one-time event thing like the Halloween thing. I don't know if that means a movie. Who knows? But I think that's the element that they're kind of keeping up their sleeve, and it's for the very reasons that you kind of just talked about, Tice, where Mark and Steven were able to find common ground, but it seems like that will be much more difficult or nigh impossible for both of them to do with Jake. And so I think it'll be a pick your poison thing. And I where it's left right now, Mark and Steven both think they've rid themselves of Khonshu, but so long as Jake is around, that's not going to happen.
And they've acknowledged Jake is also around now too, because they're still they're still strapping themselves to that bed with the sand.
Right.
And that was one of my biggest questions about the whole thing was, well, oh man, now is Moon Knight gone? And obviously they answered that in the end, that thanks to Jake, he's very much so still around. Mm-hmm. And
when Khonshu shows up in the limo, and he shows up in the comic, like, so he's in the suit, just the bird head sitting on top of like Sarika's suit. I
love it.
Right. In the Spectre limo with the license plate that said Spectre. Yeah, that was dope.
And Jake, how freaking Jake's wearing cool. What's that kind of hat called?
I can't think of the name of it, but yeah.
Yeah, you know, he's wearing the
murdering
hat.
The murder hat.
His murdering hat.
This is a just for us thing, but I've always called that the coffee hat because every single person I've known has worn that hat.
Very good. It's funny. Very good.
But yeah, the whole Jake reveal, by the end of this episode, I was like, what even just happened? Where is this leaving us? How could they possibly do this to us? But all of that was just pretty much erased with the Jake reveal. And that was exactly what I needed at the end of that episode, because before that reveal, cherry on top. That was wonderful.
Before as those credits rolled, I was pissed. I'm like, this is not what I expected. This is not what I wanted. They left way too many things unanswered. And then
I was confused and sad.
Then we watched the after credit scene. I'm like, holy crap, this is the best part of the whole episode, and it's on the wrong side of the credits. What's going on?
I agree. I watched first take, I watched this, I was very disappointed. I mean, even after the cutscene, I was like, where was this like a couple like 30 minutes ago? Like, why couldn't this
two
have
episodes
been...
ago?
Or
here's the thing.
Two episodes.
He's been
right
there the whole time. We've seen him on screen. We've seen him on screen.
Yeah.
Well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes and no.
Well, I think
yes
so.
And no.
I think
that's what I'm saying. So yeah, that brings up one of the points I had, specifically the part when they're in the mental hospital.
Yes.
And he has the nose bandage on.
Yep.
And he goes after Dr. Harrow with the spiky
thing.
Dust
That's
statue.
Jake. That's 100%. Right.
He totally had a New York style accent there.
Sure.
Definitely. He sounded
different.
He went straight to violence. He, for sure. And then that episode, I kind of forget we didn't do an episode for episode 5. But in that episode, we see three unique encounters in that office. One right at the beginning of the episode is Mark, it appears, with a bloody nose. He's looking around the same way Mark did in the previous episode. He's looking around the office, seeing all these resemblances. And then two more times, we've got Mark later on and then Steven near the end. So I think for sure that first one, bloody nose, was very probably Jake. Yeah.
I think when we see the personality at the end of episode 2 sitting in the tent in the desert that with the whiskey bottle, that's also Jake.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Jake.
And
there was
at least one more point. I can't remember where, but he kind of talks in that accent a little
very
bit.
Very end of the episode when he's in the asylum during the dream, right before Harrow walks away from him with the bloody feet. You get that Boston.
Oh, yeah. I think that could have been him too a little bit.
Which was also confusing because at the end, then, before he says, late as gay is, he says, I think we'd rather go back to saving the world, after Mark and Steven have both been like, we don't want to do this anymore. So that's really interesting, that counter of like, we don't want to do this anymore, please leave, versus, hey, we're going to go back to saving the world.
Mm. Yeah, that was a little confusing.
But
kind of the idea.
So in the comics, there's a very common state that all of the human personalities sit in, and they don't know what is actually reality. That comic I sent you earlier today, Kate, it's the asylum run that very closely mirrors what we saw on the TV show. And at the end of one of them, like, it's much like this. We don't know what is actually real. We all assume that, like, at the end we're in actual reality, which we never have full-on confirmation of, but I am one of them that assumes that we're in real life at that moment. But at the end of multiple Moon Knight comics, he's questioning what's real, and he always just says, well, it's real enough. Like, and he's just content. So when he said, like, I don't know. I kind of wanted a little bit of that when he was going back and forth with Hera at the end, right before Leia's gate is. Like, I don't know. I kind of wanted him to question what was reality, and then he was like, you know what? I'm going to go back to the other one because I enjoyed it more.
Very interesting.
And kind of still leave us with question marks above our head if it was actually, like, real or not.
Yeah, it seems like they're trying to blur that line, and they even did it with Harrow then at the end, where he just essentially swapped. He was in the same boat that Mark was in, where he was a patient at this institute, and but then we very clearly see a heavy dose of reality with Jake showing up at the very end. And so it seems that it's not exclusive to Khonshu that being bonded with these Egyptian gods and being an avatar for them has a very distinct toll on the individual's mind. Because we had that with Harrow, and him talking about having been the avatar of Khonshu, but he also seemed out of it now having been the avatar of Ahmet. And so that's kind of interesting.
For sure. And we mentioned it earlier. Jordan was going to get to it, but Layla officially turns into the Scarlet Scarab. Dude,
that was
like, it's freaking sweet. To be fair,
I don't know what kind of body double she has, but that actress wants it. She wants it bad. Like, she was doing just such a good job with everything I saw, especially just the motion of the body and everything. And again, that could very well be somebody else, but regardless, her motion capture and everything was just spot on. Loved every minute of seeing her on screen.
It's another moment where she comes out in the Scarlet Scarab get up and she does the little sword thing that I immediately was just like, okay, whatever. But I think that's mainly because of, so it's like an industry thing that the CGI is way behind. So I just don't think they took as much time to actually, like, polish it and make it look like it was in Wonder real life.
Woman vibes from Layla, specifically with the orchestral music in the background sounding very similar to the Wonder Woman theme. And so, which I think is good.
Well, they have similar accents too. She's Egyptian.
Sure.
She's Jewish. Like,
yep.
They don't look dissimilar.
I think May Kalamawe, I think is how you pronounce it. I think she really did an incredible job. She would be like most improved character for me. I do think, now this isn't anything against like women's empowerment, because I think it's very important to have women in these superhero movies to inspire young girls to be like, to have like, oh, hey, this is an avatar of what I want to look up, or like these characteristics of like who I would want to have characteristics like, or how we like comics or like comic book heroes. I only say this because I feel like Marvel, like this is like one point where Marvel keeps tripping over. And it's along the lines of like, we've kind of seen like the story. We've seen the story point in like previous things. So like Pepper Potts, when she gets her survivor armor, Hope becoming the Wasp, Peggy Carter taking the serum and What If, Kate Bishop taking on the mantle of Hawkeye, Sylvie is like the variant of Loki. Like, I wish that they had their own screen time to hash out to these characters instead of adding something at like the very end that's supposed to validate this character for having gone through this adventure or this journey. Instead,
you want to see him as a primary hero instead of support.
Yeah, because I would rather Moon Knight be invested in a story of like, hey, instead of investing in Red Scarab right now, because I think Layla can be a character that can carry her own story along with Moon Knight. I just wish that we had a little bit more answers about like the plot points in Moon Knight rather than setting up another character to potentially build out more content. And I know it's comic books and there's characters and there's, you gotta kind of enjoy the story, but I think sometimes Marvel gets tripped up in like, hey, we gotta set up this character at the sacrifice of maybe making content or like making a full story. And so that kind of got a little thin for me there. But however, I felt that like Layla's character as a whole, I really wish Layla would have been Red Scarab the entire time. That twist would have made the show be like, oh my gosh, she's had this power the entire time. And
like she's kind of the agent watching everything play out.
Yeah.
And intervenes when she absolutely has to.
Exactly. And I know there'd be some pivot points, so, like, well, what about the point where she and her, or where Steven and her are trapped in the room chased by the invisible jackal and stuff? Like just seeing how it would play out, and like her, she's also trying to investigate like what's going on with Mark. And not pulling the trigger on becoming Red Scarab at that point would kind of be along the lines of like, okay, I don't know what's going on, like, or like helping him be Moon Knight or something. I don't know. I just wish we had, my point is, I wish we had like more of a connection with all three personalities that would lead up towards it instead of having to set another character up aside from what we kind of wanted, or what I guess what I wanted.
Right.
So I went over the whole Scarlet Scarab theory in the last episode, but part of that is that her dad before her, because she's named after her dad, her middle name and last name, obviously. But she's named after her dad, who is, I'm assuming, referencing to the Scarlet Scarab, the original one. And she's clearly the avatar for Towerette. And Towerette mentions knowing her dad.
Yeah.
Like, so there is a good shot that, you know, maybe this was in the family. And because we get Khonshu at the end saying, like, look at Mark being an idiot because he thinks that I wanted to go after
Layla.
Layla. That's, when really I knew I was secure.
Interesting. Towerette mentions that she took Layla's father to the Field of Reeds. And it seems like with all of this, it's been setting up that people don't end up in those realms if they don't have some connection to the Egyptian gods. And so if her father is in the Field of Reeds now, he very likely had a direct connection to one of these gods.
Yeah.
And was potentially the very first Scarlet Scarab.
Interesting.
Still a worshiper in some sense.
Yeah.
Sure.
Right.
That is interesting. Right. But that's not fair. Hey, I want to go back to...
At least we know she's an Egyptian superhero. Because, you know,
yes,
they told
us. Know that.
Because they told
us. She's an Egyptian superhero.
Right.
Yeah.
I will say, out of all the substitutions they made, sorry, Leroy, I'm just going to get this in quick. Out of all the substitutions they made from the comics to the series, getting Marlene out and putting in Layla was the right call.
I agree.
It did.
Mm. What were you going to say, Leroy?
I kind of going back to your point about them adding in like this, almost like an origin story for Layla. I think it just kind of goes, and they had to do it on the last episode too. They constantly do this with the last episode of these series. They shove so much into it when it would benefit so much for like this episode alone to spread out some of the things that happened over like two or maybe three episodes. Mm-hmm. And I don't understand why they keep doing that.
This was the shortest episode in the entire series at 43 minutes.
Yeah.
Was it really?
Yeah.
Yes.
It's bonkers.
I was expecting this to be like maybe an hour and a half. It was 40. Yeah. It was barely 45 minutes.
Yeah.
And we saw this coming. We saw this coming from a mile away. We knew this was going to happen. There were so many threads we needed to follow to the end, and they did not have enough time to do all of it. And
And
I also had that exact thing back in my negative Michael's column, because the pace of this episode was just ridiculous. Like, you could have had a 20 episode series.
Remember those?
At this point.
In a perfect world.
Remember those?
I think my
that
big,
was a little
that was unfortunate. And I think the other thing is, like, as soon as like we get the blackout of Mark and Steven, it just kind of speeds up really quick. And like, I think my only hiccup was, how did they know the incantation to trap Amit into
that tripped me up too.
Yeah.
I took it as Towerette, like
Tower and Conchu,
so like,
but he was, but Conchu was getting his ass kicked though.
He was busy. Correct.
I took it as Towerette like kind of taking over like both of them and doing it, because so they learned, or Layla, I'm not gonna say they, Layla learned how to do it through Osiris, which means that I'm assuming all of the gods know how to do it. It's just like their very last straw. So I also got thrown for a loop, but I gave them the benefit of the doubt because they had, you know, 45 minutes to answer all of these questions, that it was just Towerette just taking over saying, this is what we're going to do. Because we skip from, you know, center of Cairo, Harrow getting his ass kicked, to they're dragging him into the pyramid again. So, like, along the way, you know, who knows what could have happened, but I gave him the benefit of the doubt of that, but it also threw me for a loop. Like, I'm sitting there like, how in the frick?
At that
do
point,
they know
it was just kind of like, there have been so many of these moments where we're kind of rushing along to an end that it didn't really faze me anymore.
Right.
So, yeah. The pacing in the front half of the series felt really good, if anything, a little slow at just the gradual reveals. And then it was just like we were on an absolute, like, straight
dead sprint.
Just a
sprint at the last episode. And it feels like they had so much potential. Like, I would not have been upset seeing more Amit screen time with how
And
right.
Like,
Slow was... Slow was the correct play for the beginning of this, though. Like, you had to, like, drag us along a little bit, make us question it. But, like, there's no need, like you said, to be sprinting.
Yeah, and I feel
like
I was watching an interview. I was watching a BBC interview with Oscar Isaac and talking about how he was producing this film. And one thing that really came up, a pinpoint in making X-Men Apocalypse was that Oscar Isaac was in that Apocalypse suit for so long. And that was, like, one of the things that he hated the most about that film. Right. And a part of me is, like, I know we're getting, like, we got a lot of Mark and Steven and a little bit of Jake and not a lot of Moon Knight. And I feel like this could be tinfoil hat, but just, like, that really bad experience of being Apocalypse could have maybe influenced, like, how much he wanted to be in the Moon Knight suit, which that's all speculation and stuff. And then, do you think this episode tanked a little bit because of what's coming out tomorrow?
So I think that's all personal. It tanked for me personally because I'm freaking.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like,
for Multiverse of
Disney
Madness.
Plus, like the but, the TV shows, compared to the what's going on the silver screen, like that's what's going to progress things. Like, we get, besides Loki, I will take that back. Besides Loki, I felt like Loki has done, I think is one of the better Disney Plus shows that we've seen so far in terms of, like, moving things along, but.
Right, and Loki went into that knowing that they were getting a season two. All of the other series have just, to their knowledge, been a one and done. They were going in to introduce a character, and then they were
going
to
have we heard for sure yet if this is getting a second season, Moon Knight?
The only thing we got was the mild tinfoil hat thing where they switched it from the series finale to the season finale. That's the only thing we have, but no one's came out and actually
said,
hey,
a season two.
Because if we do, we already know it's going to be Bushman and it's going to be them battling with Jake, which I don't know how much people actually want to see that. Like, I think all of us are ready to, we obviously want answers to like what they're going to do with Jake and everything, which I that could be better done in a film.
I honestly think you need six hours
to do it.
The amount of brutality that needs to happen in order for me to be like, I can actually see the vengeful hand of Khonshu. Not necessarily R, because I think label you can have a brutal, violent film just with like tone wise as PG-13. And the reason why I say this is, and now this Shade Kate's coming out. I think Batman has ruined me in terms of superhero movies, because I think Batman has blown everything out of the water in terms of what to expect from a superhero film in terms of action, tone, story, and feeling. Like, if that's,
and they did that. They did that with a PG-13 rating
if we do see Jake. I have the expectation that we see Pimp Daddy Khonshu being like, hey, this is who, this is my right hand, and you are going to have to walk along with it. You are in for the ride. Like, there is no way around it. Obviously, you two idiots wanted out, but this is it. This is what you've signed up for. And when they're talking in the desert, when Steven is making the deal with Khonshu, and Khonshu's like, all right, I'll free you both. I got to the Darth Vader vibe of all too easy in his mind of like, I've got these two, because they do not know about who you really, or about who they really are.
Khonshu is a scallywag. There are no two ways about it.
Silly old bed.
Yeah.
I'll ask you guys this, because I am incredibly limited in the comic knowledge of Moon Knight. Like, this has forced me to get into it. I don't know, like, your guys' past with it or anything. But, like, how would, like, would you guys tune into a second season of him just, like, I'm talking, like, a six, like, hour piece, like, what this one was, six episodes of him just trying to figure out what's going on with Jake and to just tie up knots of, like, origin stories?
I would.
Because personally, I don't think I
would. Why
would
that get made?
Like,
though?
I just want him in the Midnight Suns now.
I could see a season
now.
Two, but that's not what they're going to do.
Right, that's my point.
There's going to be another thing to fight and figuring out Jake at the same time. It's a personal story alongside a main story.
What I would like to see is, like they've done with characters like, for example, Scarlet Witch. She has not had her own film. Granted, she did have WandaVision. But a large part of characters like her come in growth from interacting with these other established characters. So I would love to see like another hero, or maybe one of our future Midnight Suns entities, whether it's someone like a Blade or something that thinks Moon Knight might be a villain, because they're seeing the handiwork.
You're putting a bow on
because they're seeing the handiwork of Jake from State Harm hurting all these people.
Wow. And, that's amazing.
And see him doing what he does, and they think, oh, this is one of the baddies. And then maybe they run into Mark or Steven, and they're like, no way, this is the same guy. And he'd be like, funny thing, you're right. It's not the same guy, but it is. And I think that'd be, I would be all for that, but I don't think they'd really pull that off being a season two of Moon Knight or whatever. If they did do a season two of Moon Knight, it would have to obviously explore the Jake personality, but there would need to be something more to it, whether it's tied in with the Scarlet Scarab and more development of that character and all that.
He doesn't have a ton outside of like Midnight Suns and stuff like that. So they would have to get into the Bushmen, which is his origin story. And like, there's not many bows to tie up there. Like, it would be nice to see what exactly happened, but he already just said that his upper officer shot him and left him for dead when he was defending the archaeologists. So that's pretty much all you need to know.
But Jake was established sometime. It'd be interesting to see when that personality was created.
Yeah.
I was going to ask if anyone had any theories on when that was.
A theory I had seen.
I'm pretty sure.
Seen was Jake's who took the beatings.
I agree with that. And then the part B, like the other one that I would think of, is that it happened when the Khonshu thing started. Because even Mark is confused of who Jake is. So, like, I wouldn't think he would be confused if he made someone to, like, you know, get hit by a belt. But also he could be attempting to forget about it. I
wonder if it was a personality he sprung up to deal with what Khonshu needed him to be.
That was my second one. I'm pretty sure it happened when Khonshu happened because he needed someone to like I'm pretty sure Khonshu needed someone that wasn't going to pull punches. So he fractured his mind.
Okay.
Here's my take.
A psychopath.
Here's my take because I feel this is pretty airtight. Steven had such a beloved, loving view of his mother. He'd call her all the time, even though she wasn't there. He'd supposedly get postcards from her. Why would he have that view if Mark created Steven to take this abuse and these beatings from his mother? I think Steven, not knowing what he was doing, made Jake, and that's why neither of them are aware of that personality, because Steven did like he does, and he would get scared in that moment. Boom, Jake takes over just in time for the belt, and it's no wonder he's the way that he is. And that's why the other two personalities have no recollection of him, because Mark didn't make him, and Steven doesn't know what he's doing when it comes to that stuff, because Steven thought he was the original. Exactly.
My take on it.
That's my hot take.
Yeah, my take
I like that a lot.
These are all awesome. I feel like he briefly talked about why he got kicked out of the military. He mentioned it to Steven right before they go into the Temple of Khonshu, or like when they're investigating around all the architects in episode 5, I believe. He said something about like a quick spell will get you kicked out. And
he said going rogue in a few.
And so I wonder if there was some PTSD going on in that moment. And Steven may have come out in order to protect Mark. And then Steven's like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. And then like, I like the opinion of it being like a copy of a copy, and Steve and Jake is the one who just comes unglued trying to protect everyone at all costs, because it's like fight or flight in an extreme one way with Steven and an extreme the other way with Jake.
Other way with
Here's my part of my logic I forgot to mention with that too, is that this concept of scales and scales balancing has come up a lot, and it's kind of, you know, some of the laws of motion. Every action has an equal and opposite reaction. So if Mark made Steven to be this good guy, or the guy he wanted to be, presumably Mark was as balanced as any other human prior. And when he made Steven, something had to be made to counteract that shifting of the scales in the opposite direction, which is why we get Jake.
Speaking of those scales, there was something very interesting I noticed once Amit came out, and that was Harrow's scale staff, like the head flipping and it becoming an axe. I was
the battle staff.
Freaking axe.
The battle staff is so badass. Cool. That was awesome.
Which to me was just an extension of Amit more using the scales as an excuse just to devour souls. And that was her true
peace was never an option.
It was just a fraction
when it was convenient. I have a incredibly, like, it was just my knee-jerk reaction when I was watching it. If I was in Layla's shoes and I'm walking in there trying to find Khonshu and as the Ushabti, would you not start freaking breaking every single arm of them?
Just going,
Dude, literally, I would be grabbing each one and snapping them. Like,
that would be a terrible idea. Because they were imprisoned for a reason, and she knew vaguely why Khonshu.
Almost right, sounds like a multiverse of madness.
She knew why Khonshu was imprisoned. Wow. She didn't know why all of these others were. I would not go in and just start breaking statues. Right.
Hear me out. Swap out Layla and Sylvie and just see what happens. Oh, see what Sylvie would have done.
Different character.
You robbed me of my childhood. Stab. If you stepped on my toe. Stab.
So if I'm going... Jeez. If I'm going to rescue someone because they wound back the night sky, like, I'd be like, all of these people are innocent as hell. They did nothing. Yeah, so yeah. I would just start busting every single one of them. Jeez. And just watch the chaos ensue. Because also, Osiris said that they needed more avatars than what were available, which is part of the reason why I had the thought. Because I was just like, well, if you need more avatars, just start breaking open gods and let them go find people.
This is kind of a tinfoil hat theory, but I kind of hope that as soon as we establish like all three personalities with Mark, that Mark like has the power of like three individuals having the power of one avatar in one body, and like just him just being like super super powerful. But that's just me.
I going back to your question. Or go ahead.
There is a version of Moon Knight that looks like he kind of looks like Iron Fist when he's actually in his like suit, not the Netflix Iron Fist.
I am Iron Fist.
The comic one where he's like part ninja, and that's the strongest we've ever seen Moon Knight, because it was on a full moon and it was a different essentially. Yeah. But yes, that's the answer.
Your question about whether I'd watch another season of this Moon Knight, and I think coming into this, I have no knowledge of Moon Knight from the comics, but just this show alone makes me feel like we just kind of are scratching the surface with the potential of this character. And I would absolutely watch another season of this. I feel like this season needed more episodes, and I would watch more of this to further develop, because we've clearly got issues between Mark, Steven, and Jake, and they need to figure that stuff out somehow. So whether they do that primarily focusing on it, I doubt they'd do that. They'd need a conflict to drive the reason for them coming to terms with Jake.
So with where we're at with him, with the character now, I don't think I'd watch season two of them trying to wrap up questions. But on to your point, I would, because I love Marvel stuff. But if they would have done it correctly and like wrapped everything up in season one and then just moved him to the silver screen, I think that would have been ideal. Like have 20 episodes, really take your time with it, do it correctly, and then when he moves on to the Midnight Suns, we're not questioning who killed Layla's dad or anything like that.
That would
like,
have been ideal.
Everything is
for sure
neatly tied up. We have a 20-hour origin story of this character. Because so they're slowly starting to get away from origin stories because of what we have experienced with Spider-Man and Batman in the past. Like, we have how many versions of an origin story with those characters? So they're like, maybe we don't want to hover on them so much, and they're just like getting through them. Because with the Tom Holland Spider-Man, like, I mean, we don't even see the point where he gets bit by the spider, which I personally love. Just get to the point.
Yeah.
Gets bit on
but
the
like,
butt.
I think they shied too far away. I agree with you. This should have been, you know, 20 hours long instead of nine.
And I mean, I think even just 10 or 12 would have made a difference. But not that I'm disappointed in what we got. It could have, everything can always be better. But overall, I'm happy with the show. Overall. I mean,
I was pleased.
I just want to real quick go over the episode ratings on IMDb. Episode 1 was an 8.1. 2 was the exact same thing, 8.1. 3, 7.7. 4 was an 8.4. 9 was the highest rated at 9.1. And so far with 6,000 votes, 8.3. is where we're at with the finale. So just kind of right there. right in the middle on the finale, but Asylum rated Silent.
It's 100% the highest rated. Yeah, it's done very well. And
another thing I'd like to point out is so far on Disney Plus, this is the first get to the MCU original character show we've seen, and I'm very happy with how they've tackled someone new as opposed for to sure. just kind of extended stories for other characters.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
If you go back and rewatch episode one, episode one does a full explanation of the entire series, all in the freaking fish tank of Gus. So if you go back and watch it, everything on the bottom is episode by episode what actually happens.
Cheeky old beds.
the castle, the pyramid, Khonshu. Huh. Like, it's freaking cool. I will say the one thing that I do highly enjoy about this is as of tonight, on May 4th, 11:45, this is the most violent thing the MCU has ever done, and I really appreciate it. Now, I am pretty sure here in about 15 minutes that is going to change, but I highly, highly enjoy that they're like starting to like nudge the face beating.
Are you meaning we're going to get a lot of violence in Multiverse of Madness? Really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. The body count is going to be through the freaking roof, dude.
That's exciting. Well, not exciting, but anyway, it'll be interesting.
Well, we started it with a question.
Yes, very sad. Anyway,
started it with a question, and we're going to end it with a question. Of the Disney Plus like series, where do you put it? Like, it doesn't have to be an exact, but like, I think all of us are holding Loki up on the list, right?
Yeah,
I'd say Loki, then Moon Knight, and somewhere.
Yep.
Everything in between, and then at the bottom, Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
It's out of the line, but he's right. Yeah.
Dude, I really like WandaVision, too, though.
COVID bent that freaking series over and sandpapered it, man. That freaking sucks.
I think I would agree that I think in terms of like as soon as how much I'm satisfied after watching a show from start to finish, I think Loki, I would agree with you guys.
Do all of us have this at two?
I would say two. I need to watch them both again.
Yeah.
But just from remembering back on Loki and how it ended, I would say that still holds the number one spot. But this really, really gave it a run for its money.
It did.
For sure.
It did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Agreed. And I wanna
I hold WandaVision higher than I think I should, because I was telling Michael this before we hit record. I started rewatching it today, and the first four episodes of that series are essentially
it was so unique, though. Like, it was. That's never been done before.
It really was for the time.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
Here's what I wanted to say about WandaVision is, as far as the show itself, it may not have been like one that I'd enjoyed as much as like Loki or whatever, but the concepts and the character development that it established is arguably the most influential. I think that'll become even more true after seeing Multiverse of Madness, but I think the driving point of Wanda's brokenness and want for her family, I think, is going to impact the MCU as a whole as much, if not more, than even the events of Loki, honestly.
Yeah.
So as far as the series and what it showed, it was cool and neat and at some point silly, and it was cool to see it do spinoffs of all these other classic shows like Bewitched and stuff. But
yeah.
You know, and now that I'm thinking about it, like, we got like confirmation of Secret Invasion in that.
Mm.
We got Photon. Yeah.
Direct reference
White
to
a lot.
Yeah,
the back half,
the Darkhold and Scarlet Witch.
The first half was very intriguing, and the back half was just nuts.
Yeah.
Loaded.
That was a good show. I might put that at number three, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, that'd be my number three.
Yeah, I think that's my three as well.
Hawkeye was
Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
Yeah,
will
Hawkeye was good.
It
just didn't do anything new and exciting, I guess.
Hawkeye implied a lot about Hank Pym that I am like scratching to get answers about, because I don't know, he's just got to be like the new Stark and supplying all of the new Avengers with their stuff, but we just haven't seen it yet, and I'm very excited for that. But
anything else, gents? Go ahead, Michael.
Go for it. No, you go ahead, Kate.
Okay. Two things. Back to your previous question of would I watch another season of this based on finding answers about Jake? I think overall, the thing I'm disappointed about the most with Moon Knight is maybe the lack of Moon Knight. And I think going back to the first episode where the writers are asking us, the consumers, to trust in the process of these stories. And at first I was really disappointed I didn't get to see it right away. And I'm glad that I'm wrong in that, in terms of A, this is the first time I think since either watching Daredevil and the Infinity War where I'm like so motivated to go out and get into comics to investigate, to dive into storylines, to just see where this could go. And like I've got three coming on the way, and I'm going tomorrow to our local comic book shop to go grab more. And as a fan of comics, I am so happy to get all my comics out and like cross-reference things. So like, oh, this is actually when I first found out Moon Knight. Like this is like a short little cover story in an Amazing Spider-Man. And I am so happy that I kind of went through like, I just want more. And I hope that this can be a way for like people to like go out and like just go get stuff. Like,
one, that's like literally my number one goal of what we're doing now is, obviously we all love talking about Marvel stuff, but when I do the character episodes, the reason why they're under 10 minutes is because all I want to do is just spark like something in your brain where you're like, oh, I kind of like this. And then you actually go out and get the comics and like learn for yourself.
Like because doing this more often. And like, I'm wanting to invest in like content here.
Right.
But it's also like just for like my own regulation of my mind of like being able to like find peace and like trying to just like settle down and just enjoy comics. But with that being said, I think my biggest takeaway was when Mark gives up the self-manifestation of being in the field of reeds, giving up the quiet, giving up the warmth in order to go and save Steven from the Duat, and him confessing to him that like the real superpower was Steven. And I think how I took that is like the real superpower of any individual is to have the courage to make decisions and changes necessary to find a wife, to find a life that's worth living. And I think I found myself thinking about that while watching a comic book show. And I know a couple episodes ago I was like, yeah, I just want Metal Moon Knight to punch people's faces off. But at the same time, like, Episode 5 did something for me to where, like, growing up through a traumatic event growing up as a child and how I had, like, how my mind works in terms of attachment and, like, trying to find the ways to regulate or to feel like I was wanted. Like, having those things set up in your life to kind of protect you from things and, like, not necessarily, like, they're, like, the end-all be-all, but, like, having the courage to at least like talk about those things and like talk about the things you're going through and being able to say like, I struggle with these things, but I'm willing to make the changes to move past them and to look back on them and be like, hey, I was at this point and that helped me through this. And being able to think about like real life situations in comic books is, I think, the reason why we love these things so much. And so I really underestimated the character driven like narrative in this show, because Like, I think we're just like, okay, we're waiting for the pendulum to swing the other way of the swift hand of vengeance. And I think it's coming. And I think we just have to be a little bit more patient. And I think our patience will be rewarded someday, hopefully on the big screen. And that's what I got to say about Midnight.
I do want to mention, if anyone else is interested in getting into Moon Knight comics, starting with the Asylum series is always good, but if you don't want to go out and spend money, you can just rewatch the series, and anytime you see a QR code, that is a free Moon Knight comic. I missed that. So scan it. And in the first one, yep. I would actually suggest scanning that one, because it is actually Werewolf by Night. It's Moon Knight's Werewolf by Night that we're getting in October. So, right. That it would be a good one to scan and read, because it's coming down the pipeline.
I don't know how to top Cade's speech.
Yeah, sorry, Michael.
Finding your better self. No. Finding your best self, or the way to improve yourself. I was just going to say, well, we found out Moon Knight could transform in the daytime. So
we did. Yes.
That's just my fair contribution to that. That was cool that we could see that. And I also wanted to just yet again sing the praises of Oscar Isaac, because now not only did we see him doing these different personas, but we saw him doing all three of them in one scene. Just flipping on a dime, like it was no big deal. Different accents, different body language, different expressions, all those things. It's just, I have not seen many actors or actresses that can do what he did seamlessly some of those scenes.
Very lucky to have that.
He got to flex it this episode, the final episode, more than any of the ones prior, I felt. For sure. And it showed. So, for sure. Those are my contributions.
For sure.
And Jake from State Harm, of course.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Jake from State Harm. If I can figure it out, that's going to be some of our charge.
Yes, please.
What's he wearing? A Duffy hat?
Duffy hat and bloody fists.
Yeah. Well, he's a deity, so.
Love it.
Well, you guys want to say it with me one last time? Sweet.
Forget the thing. Light of the gate. Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Three.
Light is gay as.
Light is gay as.
End it now.